Welcome. This is the Sikh Coach Podcast, a podcast exploring the Sikh principles and how to live them in the 21st century. So I think the next topic I think would be good is that on a more, again, I wouldn't say lighter note, but more of a personal note to everybody around COVID and having gone through the initial crisis period, you know, where we all panicked and had to do all sorts of stuff and figure out how to work from home and get on with life and deal with the restrictions on our lives. But now we've kind of got to some sort of normality, I guess. I mean, even though things are changing in the way the government's responding to lockdown, etc., but there's almost like we've gone through a big learning curve. And I guess you would have seen some of this with your clients and the organizations you work and the themes resonating online. What are you finding that the future is looking like, and how can we manage on our personal scale to deal with life going forward and this new normal?
Helpful. So I think the biggest thing I've seen, and I think we'll continue to see, is how boundaries have just been eroded. So because so many of us are working in the places that we call home, whilst, you know, for those of you who are parents, trying to teach your kids or you know, school your kids at the same time as having a, you know, facilitating a team call on MS Teams or Zoom at the same time as, you know, basically trying to do all the things.
Yes.
I've seen boundaries completely erode, and the knock-on effects of that are unsurprisingly very tired, very stressed, and in some instances bordering on burnout individuals. So a lot of the managers and leaders I've been doing a lot of emergency coaching.
Okay.
That's been the main thing. And I think unless we help people create new boundaries and new routines, those issues aren't going to go away, because we know lots of us won't be able to go back to an office. Lots of us might not want to go back to an office.
Yes.
And so, yeah, helping people create new boundaries, but also be self-compassionate. So I'm seeing a lot of people be hypercritical of themselves, and I include myself in this. I wrote something recently where I talked about trying to do all the things, in my newsletter actually, I talked about trying to do all the things, be all the roles, business owner, wife, daughter, friend, and I want to do it all perfectly.
Yeah.
We can't. And so being compassionate to ourselves first is one of the most important things I think we can do moving forward. But there's all sorts of stuff wrapped up in that. We can feel that's very self-serving. We can feel guilty about doing that. But it's an important thing for us to discuss, to help people maintain themselves for the long term, because this isn't going away anytime soon.
Yeah, so I think personally, I think for the first time, I probably verged on feeling burnt out when this whole thing kicked off because of the role and trying to take typically operational teams based in the office, suddenly getting them set up to work from home, making things happen, so many meetings, managing, you know, the organizational survival. And it kind of like, I started to feel it for the first time, and I was like, right, this is, if I'm feeling this, and I tell other people to look after themselves, and I need to create those boundaries. And so, you know, weekends were carved off completely. Certain time in the evening, that was it, family time. And I felt that really helped me, but I had to make that decision for myself and the organization, because it wouldn't be worth me, you know, burning out and then being off for stress or something, which would have caused more damage. So is there any tips that you can give people what they can do to start creating these boundaries or taking time out for themselves? Little ideas, I guess, that doesn't require much to do, but it can go a long way to help them.
There's almost a step before that, before putting in place stuff to help yourself. So again, I talked about this in my newsletter this week because it's come up in so many conversations. So I'm a great believer in intentional, mindful leadership and management. And what do I mean by that? I mean being aware of the things that you're doing and the choices that you're making, and then owning the consequences of those. Because lots of us want our cake and eat it too.
Hmm.
I'll give you an example. So I've been working with one client and they are feeling frazzled. They are checking their emails pretty much 24 hours a day. And my question to them was, whose choice is it to check email?
Yes.
And they kind of, well, mine, I suppose. Right. So it's your choice. Yeah. What do you gain by making that choice? Well, I feel like I'm keeping on top of stuff. I'm not missing out. It's the fear of missing out, FOMO. I'm not missing out on stuff. Okay, so there's some gains. What are the losses? Well, I'm constantly worrying about work. I'm not spending time with my daughter, blah, 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 blah. Right. Now weigh those up.
Hmm.
What's the choice that you... Do you want to make the same choice? And it could be you turn around and say, yeah, actually, I'm going to make the choice to keep checking my emails all the livelong day. And that's fine, but own it.
Yeah.
And that's where I suppose that's the biggest tip. Rather than respond to stuff through habit, which so many of us do, is just take that moment to go, okay, what choice am I making here? What are the gains? What are the losses? And then do I want to make the same choice? And by making that choice, I'm prepared for the positive and negative consequences. I'm going to own them. And when we think about things in that way, whether or not other people agree with our choices is neither here nor there. So my job as a coach isn't to judge somebody's choice, but it's to get them reflecting on it. When we make that active, thoughtful, intentional choice, we almost get back some control, rather than feel done to. So that's been the most profound and important tip that lots of clients have said has made a big difference for them. So I've got one client, because we all need help at the moment. We've got a lot going on in our brains. If I don't write it down, Avtar, I forget it, right? And so many of us are in that space. So I've got one client who has a post-it note in the corner of her laptop that says gains versus losses.
Yes.
And that acts as a bit of a, when she's kind of immersed herself in the moment, it almost acts as a bit of a prompt. And I've got another client, he's used his phone. He's set up alerts to come up every few hours with little questions that make him just stop and think about the choices that he's making. So yeah, that's probably the most powerful thing I can suggest.
I had a scene, this is video, well, from an interview that Guy Ritchie did for Joe Rogan. I don't know if you've seen it, but it resonates the same thing. And I think the question he asked him, he goes, why do you wear a suit? You know, why do you have to wear a suit? And he turned around and said, he goes, because I own the suit. The choice to wear the suit is mine, not because society is telling me to wear the suit. And I wear it for the principal reasons of why it was there, to make me feel good and look good. And it's because of my choice. It's not because people are saying you should wear it. And I think that there was the theme about it was actually taking ownership of all of your choices and understanding clearly in your mind, why are you doing what you're doing? But know what your pros and cons are from doing it, but at least then it's a conscious decision. And I think one of the things he said, you have to check in with yourself every day with that, because life takes over. You know, society takes over, the expectations come back in and all these things. And you almost got to check yourself again and say, what am I doing this for? Was it my choice? And I've had this conversation with colleagues who say, oh no, I'm really stressed. I'm working 7 days, I'm doing this. And I said, so why don't you stop? I go, because the world's not going to stop turning around. You know, you just have to pick things that are priority or not, or say choose things you won't do because you know why. And it just doesn't, some people won't get it because they just feel they're stuck in that thing and they need to carry on. But I think it's very important, that ownership.
Well, it's also, so this is where, that if you ever spoke to any of my clients, they would talk about when tough love, Hayley, comes out to play. Because when we make it about others, when we make it about, you know, when we talk about, oh, I'm so busy and stressed, when we make it about others because, oh, my manager just needs this or so-and-so, you know, when we make it about the system or other people, we let ourselves off the hook.
Yeah.
We don't have to do the work, do we? Because it's them. The problem's over there. But actually, we all play a part in our problem. Whether we like that or not, we all play a part. We're not passive, you know, just sat there. You know, we play a part through the choices that we make. And it's, as you say, it's just about owning your choices. And that's not for other people to judge those choices, but just own the impact of the choices you make. And as I say, so you could turn around and go, do you know what? I've weighed up the gains and losses and I'm going to continue working 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Fine.
Exactly.
Just yeah. Own the impact of that.
Yeah, exactly. So once people have taken the ownership and decided to do these things, then is there some tips and techniques to help them still? I mean, there are people that are still doing 7 days a week because they choose to do it, but they know that definitely the long-term impact is going to be difficult. Is there any tips you can give them how to manage their well-being in between that?
So you might have seen it actually. So a really popular sketch note that I shared about 6 weeks ago, 6 or 8 weeks ago. I did it a bit like a bingo card. So it was about self-compassion in daily life. So there's a psychologist called Chris Germer, and his expertise is self-compassion. And he talks about 5 pillars of self-compassion, such as physical, spiritual, emotional, etc. So I created like a little bingo card. So you can kind of choose one thing from each pillar to do each day, or you can create your own. So I've encouraged some of my clients to create your own. Hmm. Have a menu of things under each pillar yes. that work for you, and that you just schedule in each day. And you don't have to be overwhelming things. So I think work-life balance becomes overwhelming when we see the balance bit as yet another thing on our to-do list. So I've got to find 2 hours to exercise and meditate. And I'm a great believer in the moment, particularly at the moment of little and often.
Yes.
So I've had a few clients who talked about that's really worked for them. So lots of my senior leader clients are saying, I'm too busy. I don't have time for a break. I'm working till 10 in the evening, from 8 in the morning. I don't have time for lunch. And actually, when we break it down, so I ask questions like, what's the first thing you do when you wake up? Check my emails. Okay, could you do something different? Like what? So could you go and make a coffee and stand in the garden if you have one, just for 5 minutes?
Hmm.
Yeah, of course I could do that for 5 minutes. Right, okay. Could you, so about midday, could you get up from your chair and do some stretching for 10 minutes? Just for 10 minutes or 5 minutes. Yeah, of course we can do that. And when we make those things less overwhelming and shorter,
yes,
it can make, but it all adds up. So little and often are things that have worked for lots of my clients in the past few months.
I think when you break it down to that, it's very difficult for people to say, oh no, I can't find 60 seconds to stretch or
to right?
We'll find the time to do other things. You know, sitting in a 60-minute Zoom meeting that we only had to have 10 minutes input in. But, you know, and then when it comes to doing for ourselves, we're like, we don't have time for exercise or even just sitting. So I think one of the things I realized was actually being at home with a 4-year-old, he, you know, listening, I can listen to him and I can hear him playing in the garden. And I'll be like, right, I've got 10 minutes. I'll just go and jump on the trampoline with him. Or you know, what I've been doing recently is opening his music world to the 90s dance hits. So I'll pick some random old 90s dance hit that I grew up with and just have a dance with him. And I was like,
it's dad dancing. You did
dad
dancing there.
To him, he thinks it's cool, so I might as well get away with it while I can. But, you know, these are the things, I guess, working from home has actually allowed me to do. And small little hacks of having time out and re-energizes you, gives you exercise and have family time at the same time. So I think you can be really creative. And I think what you've created is really good because you've given a framework for people to create their own timetable for time out. Because usually we make a timetable for work, or objectives or tasks, and we get overwhelmed with that. Whereas actually, if I had a timetable like this, I'll look forward to the breaks more than doing the work properly.
Yeah, but it also gives you energy to do the next lot of work.
Yeah,
I love those examples you've given, because as you say, it ticks off a number of things. Jumping on the trampoline with your son, you're connecting, you're having fun with your little boy, but you're getting some exercise, so you're getting an endorphin rush. I think that's wonderful. And I think it's about finding little moments of joy throughout the day. They don't have to be the big audacious things. And I think that's what we do to ourselves as society. We see well-being and moments of joy as another thing to do, and it has to be this big thing, and it doesn't. It can be in the little moments, it can be in the little, but it's about us stopping and noticing them.
I think the one thing around lockdown as well is put things in perspective, like a lot for me anyway. Actually, do you need to go on a holiday to enjoy yourself? You know, I think I probably enjoyed myself in my own house. I probably made more use of the place that we've bought, you know, the asset that we own, than we would have in the past, you know. And we'd always have these things that, right, it's the weekend, we must do something Saturday and Sunday, we must go there here. But actually what we realize now is actually we value those moments more when we do go out, because it's less often, but there's so much more value you gain during the day as well. It doesn't mean that it's anything less than that. So yeah, it's been really sort of humbling actually. So, okay, so I think the sketch notes are amazing, right? I think you should publish these. I don't know whether you're going to do that.
I do. So I have, six free ebooks that people can request.
Okay. As you teach an MBA, you know, the MBA students and universities love these kind of models and stuff that just makes something large, digestible in a pictorial format. And I think your style is very unique, so I think.
Thank you. One of the what got me into it, I came across probably who I think is one of the best sketchnoters in the world. He's a gentleman called Tanmay Vora. He's an HR director in India.
Right.
And he's prolific on Twitter and LinkedIn, but his sketchnotes are amazing. Admittedly, he uses an iPad Pro. So they're all like really lovely. I use pen and pencil and paper. I'm old school. But I saw one of his and I was like, I really like that. I like the one page summaries.
Yes.
And so I just started trying it. The first one I ever did will never see the light of day ever. but I found the more I do them, the more I've improved over the years. Yeah. And without a shadow of a doubt, out of all the things that I share, so I share a lot of content on LinkedIn, I share a lot of research, I share a lot of stuff. But the thing that gets consistent traction and goes viral every time are the sketch notes. And I think it's because in a hyper-connected, always-on, complex world where we just feel bombarded, there's something about simple stuff. And when something's taken down into its essence on one page and somebody has taken the time to simplify maybe a complex theory, I think that resonates with a lot of people. I had a message from someone the other day saying they were dyslexic and they love the sketch notes because it actually works for them in terms of how they take information in. And that was lovely to hear.
Yes, amazing. What's been your most popular sketch note then today?
There's probably... the one that went viral, so I've had a few go viral, but the number one has been the manage your energy.
Yeah, I saw that.
That one got shared almost 100,000 times.
Yeah,
I couldn't actually keep up with all the messages. I was like, oh, is this what influencers feel like? I couldn't keep up with them. I've never seen my Twitter or LinkedIn go so crazy. Because normally I get like, throughout the day, I get like 50 or 60 mentions. This was going into the thousand. I just was like, oh, I've got to step away. I can't, because I like to reply to everybody. And it got to the point where I'd created a nightmare for myself. I couldn't reply to everybody. And I think it's because it touched on something really profound for people. But I can't claim credit for the it was a summary of a really great article by Tony Schwartz, who's an expert in energy management. So thanks to him for the Harvard Business Review article. I just made it into a colourful summary.
And I think that's an art as well, isn't it? It's like saying a message which is then difficult to get to through a whole article, but deciphering it into one image. And I think that's where people would resonate with it, because it's, social media is just fast paced. It's like slide, switch. So the attention span is very small, but when something resonates and you can just see it and understand it, I guess that's where you get really good value and spread the message. So yeah, well done on that. I think look forward to always look forward to the next sketch notes coming out.
I try and do a couple a month. So and people who subscribe to my newsletter get a downloadable version. So only if you subscribe will you get a downloadable printable version of the sketch note that you can just access.
Cool. We'll cover at the end how people can contact you and get onto the newsletter. So did you want to talk a bit about your academic piece you're doing on women in business, and what's that about? Just a brief insight.
I'm just coming to the end of the first year of my doctoral research, and I wanted to do something slightly different, so I'm just gearing up to, I'm doing my proposal for my second piece of research, which will be empirical, and it's all about women in business. So I'm particularly interested in how we define success for women in business as a small and micro business owners, and the psychological factors that enable that. So this is a widely under-researched, if researched at all, area. So I did a systematic literature review in year one, and that kind of threw up that typically we define success in financial terms. So a lot of the stuff about business, whether it's men in business, women in business, or both, we tend to talk about the economics of it. We tend to talk about sales and growth and profit, less about the non-financial aspects of success. Okay. And so I'm really interested in that. And then we look at what enables success. And again, the more traditional research looks at things like the networks people have and access to funding. I'm more interested in the inside of, the internal drive, the personality, the competencies, the values.
Yes.
So that's what I'm investigating, because there is a gap. And I also think when we use the language of, for example, entrepreneurs or entrepreneurship or even business ownership, it has a masculine connotation to it.
Yes.
And so once again, you see, and I see, I'll tell you my biggest driver for this. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of BS on Instagram. I see a lot of make $10,000 every month and just sign up for my course. And they just drive me insane. And I see lots of them, and they're not based on evidence. They're based on somebody's own experience. And I see a lot of women parting with their hard-earned money that they don't have a lot of,
yes,
signing up for this stuff,
which
is often very masculine in its basis, and crush the day and hustle and grind, and I want to basically bust that wide open and find and enable women to understand there is another way. Yeah. You can still be successful on your own terms and be you.
Yes.
That's kind of where I want to get to. And a lot of my private coaching clients are in their 40s or 50s, and they're saying to me, they're really successful corporate senior leaders, and they're like, actually, I'm not sure I want to become a chief exec, or I'm not sure I want to stay in senior leadership. I've always wanted to set up my own business doing X, but I'm a little bit frightened. And so I want to help those women. I want to help those women make the leap, but I want to kind of create a bit of a roadmap for them.
Wow, that's really good. So you want to almost enable them, empower them to do that, take that step.
And on their terms, and not let government policy or society, if money is not their driver, obviously people need money to live, but if money is not their primary driver, that doesn't mean they're not going to be a success.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And that's true empowerment, isn't it? Because they're then unable to do exactly what everybody else does. And entrepreneur, you're right, the entrepreneurship, the business is typically masculine, is masculine heavy, isn't it? So when will you conclude that research piece? Is another.
So my aim is to get the whole thing done in 2 years. So at the end of year one, which is my first paper, and then the second empirical research and paper is over the next year, and then submit my thesis with the aim of having my viva to defend my thesis probably autumn 2021. So I'm doing a professional doctorate. So if you're an occupational psychologist in the UK, if you're chartered, which is a 2 year process in itself once you've got your master's, if you're already chartered and registered, you can top up your chartership with a professional doctorate.
Okay.
Of 2 years. Whereas, for example, clinical psychology, it's the traditional straight through and then you get your doctorate. There's eight of us on my programme who are all chartered. We've all been out in the field for 20 plus years. And so we come with lots of experience and knowledge. And so I think that's why we're all able to kind of move at a pace.
Yes.
But I also have a real personal drive for trying to get it done in 2 years. So I want my mum to see me become Dr. Lewis. And she doesn't have, I don't think she has a lot of time left. And I would love that. I would love that to see her eldest daughter become doctor.
Wow.
So, although my family tend to call me Doc or Prof anyway, and I don't correct them, but
that's a great thing to aim for. So yeah, I think I definitely would have love to have you on the podcast again to show what your outcomes have been.
I'd love to talk about that.
So we can discuss that and sort of hopefully get the word out more around your findings and enable, sort of empower women to be more stronger in business. So I think you touched on the career, sort of kind of the career path of your field. So it'd be good to just give people who may be thinking of this career a bit of insight how to sort of get into this, what's involved in regards to education and experience opportunities.
Yeah. So the traditional path is in the UK. So it's slightly different in different countries, but in the UK context, so the traditional path is your undergrad degree, the primary subject should be psychology. And then you get conferred graduate basis for registration by the British Psychological Society. So you get GBR status.
Okay.
When you've done your undergrad degree, you can then go on and do a master's. So it's important that you sign up for an accredited master's. So again, if you go onto the British Psychological Society's website and type in occupational psychology, it will show you the accredited master's programmes. Accreditation is important if you want to go on and get chartership and registration. And there's some excellent universities around the country, some of which I work with. So the master's you can do a year full-time or 2 years part-time. So when I did mine, I was working. So when I started mine in 1999.
Okay.
I did mine 2 years part-time because I was working full-time. And then you take a little bit of time out in the field, and then you can do your chartership, which is roughly a 2 year process where you're having to demonstrate your application of your knowledge out in the field. So you're having to demonstrate breadth and depth. So you choose a depth area. So my depth area was organisational development and leadership. And my chartership logbook is like a book. It's like that. So you're writing up over 2 years. You have a certain number of days that you need to meet. You have a supervisor who supervises you during the process, and then it goes off to the British Psychological Society for examination.
Okay.
So that's the kind of typical path to become a chartered occupational psychologist. And then registration is with the Healthcare Professions Council. So for some psychologists and some occupational psychologists, they don't just want to be chartered, they want to be registered. So, for example, I need to be registered. I need to be on the register because I'm also lecturing.
Okay.
So if you're lecturing in occupational psychology, you need to have the right kind of accreditation. So chartership is one thing, registration is another. So yeah, that's broadly it in a nutshell. And there'll be slight differences for people in terms of your journey, but broadly that's the typical journey.
So what kind of corporate roles would people potentially be able to do? I know they can do the consulting, coaching, lecturing part that you've talked about. What sort of corporate roles would the occupational psychologist be able to do? Is that quite broad as
this
well?
This is the thing that I say to students all the time. You could do any role you wanted.
Okay.
Because if you really care about the subject, if you're really immersing yourself in the learning, if you're curious, you'll understand that you then get a deep understanding of what makes organisations tick. Yes. And the teams and individuals within that. So when I say to some of the students that I talk to at career seminars, you could be a chief exec of an organisation if you wanted. They kind of go, oh. Because for a lot of people, particularly younger students, they think they're fast tracking to becoming a consultant at one of the big five consultancies. And that's fine, but that's not the only thing you can do.
Yes.
So yes, you can be an internal consultant. You could go and work in learning and development or organisational development. You could go and work in communications and engagement. You could go and work in strategy. It all hinges on what interests you and what impact you want to have. So one activity I always get students to do is begin with the end in mind. You know, imagine you're in your 60s or 70s. So for some, that's ages away. For some of us, it's not so far away. Imagine if you're in your 60s or 70s and you win a Lifetime Achievement Award from the BPX.
Yes.
What do you want that to be for? What do you want people to be saying about you? What do you want your customers and your colleagues to be saying about you? Because when we understand that, we can reverse engineer the kind of work we want to do, the kind of organisations we want to work in, the kind of organisations we don't want to work in.
Yes.
So I have some organisations that I would always steer clear of, or sectors that I would always steer clear of. And I think that's important. And again, the other watchword is being intentional. So it just helps people be thoughtful and intentional about the path they might take. But paths can change as well, and that's okay too.
I think the powerful part is sometimes people find it hard to figure out what they want that path to be, but it's easier to say, what don't you want that path to be? Because it's a starting place, isn't it? Then you've got a smaller bit to figure out in between what the path is. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely very powerful. So actually, yeah, there's a lot of broad areas that you can get involved in then. So yeah.
It depends what's important to you. So I have some people who they really want to be called a psychologist.
Yes.
That's and again, no judgment with that. Well, then you're going to be quite limited in the, because there aren't many jobs that call you a psychologist. So there's some jobs in central government in the UK, there's some consultancies, but broadly there aren't many jobs with psychologists in the title.
Yes.
But if that's important to you, just know that, own that.
Got it.
Likewise, if that's less important, the world opens up a bit more for you. So yeah, it's all about what matters to you, what doesn't matter to you, and then kind of making some choices from there.
Brilliant. That's definitely going to help a lot of the listeners now, if they suddenly may actually interest them to becoming psychology as well. So knowing that is so broad.
I did have, so at Kingston, which is the main program I work on, I had a couple of my recent postgrad students. They were in their 40s and they were business owners. They weren't looking to become occupational psychologists, but they wanted to understand more about the dynamics of organisational behaviour, how they played a part as leaders. They wanted to learn more about wellbeing. So they were actually doing it for their own personal learning, but also to help them with their leadership journey. I think that's really cool. So not everybody who goes on a master's wants to become a psychologist. They're looking to just supplement their learning and because they're curious, and that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that the not knowing actually what it was actually really interests me. And I think on the doing an MBA at the moment, executive MBA, we are touching on some of these topics about how organizations work, management, leadership, cultures, and self-reflection. So yeah, it just adds to you as a person, you know, and understanding these different dynamics and being aware of them and everyday interactions. Yeah, so it's very, very, very powerful work. All right, brilliant. So just on the last few questions then, what is on your reading list at the moment, and what are the key things you're very keen to learn more about?
Well, there's three things on my reading list. So I'm reading a this book, probably the wrong way around, but it's called Intersectionality. It's not a light read, I have to say. It's not like, oh, I'll read this on the beach, if we could go to beaches.
Yes.
But I wanted to understand more about how different parts of our lives intersect, whether that's race or class or gender or disability, and kind of how that plays out in how we design policies and practice. And so, yeah, so I've been dipping into this as I get ready. So each year I redesign my materials for my Kingston Business School lectures.
Yes.
I've been dipping into this because I want to talk to the students more about the importance of us understanding intersections as psychologists.
Yes.
This is one. Not an easy read, sorry.
Will you be making sketch notes on it?
Do you know what? I wouldn't even know where to start, I'll be honest.
Yeah,
I have to say also, don't judge the shelf behind me. So people always comment, there's a lot of books about narcissism. And that's because my husband and I, before we even met, we both did our undergrad degrees. My major was history.
Okay.
And his major was history. And interestingly, we both studied the Second World War. So I looked at Jewish resistance to the Holocaust, because I've just never understood how other humans can treat humans in that way.
Yes.
But I was also interested in how people resisted or didn't. But I have some clients who kind of look at me. don't judge me on that. And also, I love history. I've always been fascinated with history. So the second book on my list is this one called Biased.
Okay.
By Jennifer Eberhardt. So Jennifer is a social psychologist in the States. If you want to learn more about our biases and how they impact, and the hidden prejudices that shape how we are and that shape policy, that's a really essential read.
Okay.
And then the third one, you see a theme with these, is this one by Alice Wong called Disability, Visibility. I feel I spend, and lots of us are spending, a lot of time, I think there's a hierarchy of prejudice. I think there's a hierarchy of things. So you've got gender, you've got race. So they're the big two.
Yes.
How many of us talk about disability?
Yeah.
And even when I talk about research with my students, there's tons of research about gender and leadership. There's quite a bit of research about ethnicity and leadership, and even barely any about disability. So I want to kind of educate myself. And Alice is on Instagram and Twitter, and her feeds are brilliant and provocative. But yeah, they're the three. Sorry, no light reads there.
No. It's all interesting. I think that's what I knew from your social media, that you do a lot of reading. So it's always interesting to know what other people are reading about. And, you know, all of these things, as we discussed in the podcast, are very important for us to. And I think that one of the key theme was, as a leader, you need to continue learning. And that leader thing doesn't just apply to people who are leader in their title. It's actually to all of us, because we all are leaders in some shape or form. And the more we learn and re-educate ourselves and understand where things are in the history and the systems and the way they work, is the only way that we're going to be able to have an input into improving make our iteration on having our version, our positive impact into the world. Really, that's what it's all about. So yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. And I think all of these topics, you know, we're never going to be able to do justice in an hour or so of time, because it's just so heavy and they're multifaceted, multi-layered, and it's an iteration, isn't it, that we're on that journey, even if we don't want to call it that, a process or, you know, a thing. But yeah, so where can people reach out to you? Where can people find you? And how can any organizations who want to engage you for coaching or individuals, how can they contact you for those as well?
So the number one platform is LinkedIn. So people can either follow me or connect with me. So I share stuff every day. I share research-based tips and tools to help managers and leaders. And I get a lot of direct messages through LinkedIn for people wanting to work with me.
Okay.
I have a website, so www.halopsychology.com, and that has lots of free resources. If you're into getting free stuff, you can go on there. But also you can see more information about the services that I offer and the price packages. And then Twitter. So I'm prolific on Twitter as well, and I'm at HeyPsych.
And you have a newsletter as well. So do people
sign up? I do. I don't like spam. I can't bear it when you kind of get every day. You're like, all right, you're writing every day. So you'll only get contacted from me once a month. So it goes out on the last Tuesday of each month, and you can sign up for it via my website. Or if you request any of the free stuff, such as the Sketchnote ebooks, you'll get signed up to the newsletter. And the newsletter, again, I give you access to stuff that you wouldn't get. I don't share via other means, including a research digest. So that tends to be like a 5-page PDF of the latest research, but how you can use it in your workplace. So you're using a more evidence-based approach. People love that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Definitely. I think that's the bit where, you know, influencing decisions is always good if you've done some research and you can validate some of the things that you want to bring out and make change on. That's brilliant. So we'll put all of those details in the episode for the listeners. And yeah, I do encourage you to follow Hayley because she does have some amazing content and especially the sketch notes as well. If you're pressed for time and you want to get more bang for your buck, check out the sketch notes because you will gain a lot of knowledge in a small amount of time. And I've bookmarked most of these things because I know I'll need to refer back to them to remind myself on these things. But yeah, absolutely wish you all the best with your doctoral academic piece of work, because I know it's quite difficult, as well as wearing all of the different hats that you do, lecturing and coaching and, you know, the workshops and also the family commitments as well. I wish your mother well, and I wish you achieve that sort of doctor status in time, because it's such a noble effort for you. But yeah, we'd love to have you on the show again, maybe once you finish your research piece and find out how women can be more empowered to create businesses. That's lovely. Amazing.
Thank you so much for asking me. It's been I've loved it. I've loved our conversation, and it's a real honour. I'm always honoured when people think that I'm worthy enough to be on their podcast or interesting enough. So thank you. I've really enjoyed it, and I'd love to come back on again once I have some clearer findings from my research.
Brilliant. No. Yeah, well, you get in contact with me anytime you want. Oh, yeah. And we can also help each other to promote each other's content as well. So
absolutely,
it's an ongoing relationship anyway. But
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And what I'll do, this is obviously part of the recording, but I'll send you the names of, if you want to talk to some specific people about EDI stuff who are experts in their field from a psychological perspective, I'll send you some names.
Definitely. I think the listeners, and I think it's important to give those people the voices as much as possible, because it's more than ever needed now than ever, and it's the right time.
Lovely.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the rest of the day.
You too. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Stop recording. Thank you for listening to the Seek Coach podcast. If you found this episode valuable, do share with your friends and family, and do give us feedback. You can email us at theseekcoach@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Just search The Seek Coach podcast and follow us on Instagram @TheSeekCoach. Thank you for listening. Stay blessed.